Alrighty, so we're the third talk, so we're going through the five forms for firm foundation, chapter five, and Nevertheless I Live textbook, and we've been talking about the idea that any building, if it's to be strong and stable, needs to have a good foundation. And so if our lives, if we're going to have stability in our lives, we need to have a good foundation. And we realize that, especially when we're dealing with our struggles with addiction, struggles with kind of proper mental health, other things like that, that we realize, okay, things maybe are missing that are causing it, so that when different challenges happen in life, that I'm reacting to them in a negative way, and that's leading me down the wrong path. And so Jesus, in Luke 6, 39 to 49, he talks about some different things that we're going through. And we look at them as forms. And it's like, if you're going to build some out of concrete, you need to have a form to put it in, right? And so these are things, if we have these in our life, that eventually what's going to happen is a foundation will then be developed in our life that's going to give that structure to our lives that we desire. So last week we looked at the idea of following, of who we follow. But this week we want to look at the idea of focus. And so we see the next few verses in Luke chapter 6, where he says, "And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? A hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye." And so, what I understand is that a lot of times we have a flaw in our focus, and that's a lot of times it leads us into a lot of trouble. And so our tendency, we recognize, is to focus on the weaknesses and shortcomings of others rather than our own weaknesses and shortcomings. That it's the thing, is that we don't, when we know, when we're having struggles with different things, and especially when it comes to like addictions, things like that, that there's definitely a shame that comes from that, and where we don't like to think of that, because it certainly isn't reinforcing our desire to have a positive self-image or anything like that. And so a lot of times what our mind does is it's like, how can I get my mind off of feeling bad about myself? And so automatically what happens, if we can see someone else where they have a problem, then it's like, that's the answer, where I don't have to think about my issue. I can just point out that other person's problem. And so it's really this having a critical spirit, where we're looking at and finding it. It really, what it identifies is that we have our own issues that we're trying to cover up. But actually realizing that can be difficult. And so it talks about this idea, and he says in that you say, "Well, let me take this mote out of your eye where a beam is in my own." And so a mote is like a small particle, like a speck, like a little bit of dirt or something like that. That's really, you think about it, it's hardly even noticeable, right? But then it says a beam we understand is a large piece of lumber. It's not, and so we realize it's an exaggeration, because like a beam, you think about, that's not like a 2x4. A beam is like, it'd be like 4x6 or something bigger than that. So like, how would that even fit in your eye, right? But it's an exaggeration to show something very small, something really, really big. And so it really gives a picture. It's like, well, how can you even see that person's, what's in their eye, when you have this big thing sticking out of your own eye? And so it's, while it's exaggerated, the comparison is given to show that our own issues are much greater than the issues we notice in others. And so we want to understand, especially when we're coming to dealing with addictions, dealing with other issues that we have, kind of self-destructive, self-defeating behavior. It's not something we're in a position where we can point out to others that, oh yeah, they've got all these problems, when, wait a minute, I've got my own issues to deal with. And so it's a thing to offer to help someone deal with their problems while we refuse to deal with our own problems. That's hypocritical. And because that's the thing, if we're saying to someone, well, you need to deal with this, but then they see this issue we have and we're not dealing with it, we refuse to deal with it, we try to act like it's not even there, then the person will say, well, this isn't right, this is, you're not practicing what you preach, you're saying one thing, but then you're doing something else. And so we don't usually get anywhere. We don't end up helping that person. Instead, we actually put them on the defensive. And so this is something we want to understand. That until we recognize and deal with our own problems, we possess neither the understanding nor the qualifications to help someone else with their problems. And that's the thing, is that too often what it is, it's we're just trying to get a mind off of our issues by pointing out someone else's issues. But we don't, if we haven't gone through a process of, okay, I had these struggles, I've come through them, and had success, I'm a different person now. If we haven't gone through that process, how are we going to lead someone else through that process? It's just not going to happen, right? And so we can't try to claim that we're an expert. And it's really that picture it has, is like we can't even see what their problem actually is. That our vision is obscured. That it's just not going to work to try to help that person until we get our big issue out of the way. But this is the thing is too, is that we should desire to help each other. That naturally that's what we want to do. We want to encourage, we want to help people. But if we aren't dealing with our issues first, our well-meaning but misguided attempts to help will make things worse. Because you think of it in this way, right? That you say to a person, when your vision is obscured, where you've got this big obstruction, where you can't see anything clearly, and you say, oh, here, let me reach into your eyeball and take out this little speck. What's going to happen if you can't see clearly? Are you likely to get that speck out, or are you more likely just to poke that person in the eye? And kind of this is what usually happens, is where we all have our own issues that we're dealing with, but we're basically trying to fix everybody else. What happens, all we do is we poke each other in the eye, and so it leads to fighting. And so that's, you think of any big conflict between, whether it's husband or wife, parent, child, employer, employee, that it's always, it's kind of the thing, is whatever, they know that someone else has done something wrong, then that gives a blanket justification that I don't have to think of anything I've done wrong because of this, and I can bring that up and beat them over the head with it. But of course, if we've done wrong, then they can do the same thing. And so it's never there's no opportunity for any kind of resolution, because it's basically nobody's dealing with their problem. It's always the other person has the problem. And so we realize that and it's really understanding the deceitfulness of our own hearts, where we think, oh yeah, I'm doing something good, but actually we're deceiving ourselves and trying to act like I don't have a problem, and I'm in this position where I can fix everybody. And so we have to be very careful with that. And so we wanted to see in the Bible biblical examples of flawed focus. And just going to kind of read some of these. First, we find in Romans chapter 2, verses 21 to 24. He says, thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law dishonorest thou God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. That he's laying it out. It's like if you're telling people to do something or to stop doing something, but yet you're not stopping to do from it, you're not helping them. You're actually doing great harm to the name of Christ itself. And so we want to really recognize that. Another example is the praying Pharisee in Luke chapter 18, where he is this guy that comes and two men come, one's a Pharisee, the other's a publican. A publican being a tax collector, who back then, they were just kind of understood to be people that were generally, not to be trusted, that were always trying to swindle people. But we see in Luke chapter 18, verse 10, it says, two men went up in the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee, that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week, I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And this is what Jesus says to conclude this story. He says, I tell you, this man went down at his jokes justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. That the Pharisee thought he was this great, righteous, religious man, but God says he prayed with himself, that God didn't hear it. But this man who was humble and said, God be merciful to me, that's the one that God heard. And so it's significant realizing that and just his mindset, well, I'm not as bad as all these other people, like this publican here. I'm such a good person. And what do we... I remember my pastor growing up, he said that this Pharisee, he had eye trouble. And of course, it wasn't one that he'd need glasses from. It was just, as you read it, he said, he's basically talking about himself and how good he is. And so we realize that it was pride was his big problem, right? He thought he was a whole lot better of a person than he actually was. And so sometimes we realize that we can have eye trouble, the same kind of eye trouble, that we don't need glasses to get fixed, that it just, we get too high of opinion of ourselves, and it puts us in a bad position. And always, what does the Bible say, pride comes before a fall. And so when we have struggles and we're failing, sometimes we realize, okay, maybe my attitude isn't right, and that needs to be brought into check. Another one we think of is David. We think of how he had sinned with Bathsheba and he tried to cover it up. And he thought he'd gotten away with it, but then Nathan comes and tells him this story about this guy that his neighbor, he had a whole big herd. His neighbor only had one little lamb that was like a pet. And the guy said, well, I have a guest coming over. I need to kill the lamb to feed him. And he decides, well, I'm not going to take my flock. I'm going to take this one guy's pet lamb and butcher that to have a feast. And David was just so upset and angry and said, well, this guy should die for this. But then Nathan says, well, thou art the man because of what he did. And so it's really, we can get so upset about what someone else does, and that's sometimes we want to really check that, because we say, okay, is this where I'm justified in being upset about this, or is that I can point this way because it draws everyone's attention, including my own, away from my issues. And then finally as well, we think of the adulterous woman's accusers in John chapter 8, where they brought this woman to Jesus and not really caring about justice, because if they would, they would have got the man as well as the woman before Jesus to get dealt with, right? but they're basically trying to really try to catch Jesus, see what he's going to do. And he basically says, okay, well, whichever one of you is without sin, he can cast the first stone. And as they think about that, all of them had a guilty conscience, ended up leaving. And the woman was left with Jesus, and he says, well, has no one condemned you? And she says, no. And he says, well, I don't condemn either. Go and sin no more. And that he was having compassion on her, not wanting to stay doing what she was doing that was destructive to herself and others, but instead that she would take a different path in life. And so we want to see that sometimes we can have this flawed focus, and we have to be aware of it, we have to catch it, and make sure that we have the proper focus, because if we do, that'll help us personally in dealing with our own issues, and then it'll enable us then to actually be a much greater help to other people. So we think of Christ's example from his working with the woman caught in adultery, that we need to be more lenient and encouraging towards those that are struggling, recognizing our own flaws and weakness. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 speaks of this, that, brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. That we realize that, okay, we could be in this situation, and we could fall in the same way, that we're not somebody that's so perfect that we can never stumble or fall. Because if we have that attitude, that's pretty much when we are going to stumble and fall. And so we try to help people. And it's interesting, just was thinking of another verse, and this was talking about actually the high priest in olden times, and kind of speaking in terms of an attitude we should have. It says of this, says of the high priest, you can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And that's the thing, all of us struggle with sin and different things, and so if we see someone that's either doesn't know the right way or knows the right way but's wanted out of it, we should be able to have compassion, because we also struggle with sin in different ways. And so being compassionate, and in many ways it's really, we would want someone to be compassionate to us if we were struggling, so we want to show that same compassion to other people. And the thought too that we see, this is in Proverbs chapter 20, it says, every one man will proclaim his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find. And so instead of proclaiming our own goodness, we need to prove ourselves to be faithful. And so we need to be walkers as well as talkers. That we just don't say, oh yeah, I've got it together. That we demonstrate that. Verse 7 of Proverbs says, a just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. And that's the thing, is that if we have integrity, then that needs to be demonstrated by the way that we live. But as well, we need to fight against the tendency to justify our flaws by comparing them to the flaws of others. Because, and that's, it talks about that, 2 Corinthians 10 verse 12, our tendency to compare ourselves among ourselves, that's not wise for us to do that. And we can realize it's not wise for a couple different reasons. That one, we realize that, okay, other people are not the standard that we live by. Right? It's not like a race where as long as I'm better than this person, I'm okay. That's not how it works. And the thing is, too, is that, and I think we've talked about this, especially when it comes to addiction, is that a lot of the lies that we tell ourselves that keep us in addiction is to say, well, I might have a problem, but I'm not as bad as this person. And so we think, well, okay, well, I don't have to actually deal with my problem because it hasn't got to that point. Where instead realizing, okay, that person that you see now, if you don't turn from the path you're heading down, you're going to be in the same place as that person one day. And so it's better to say, okay, this is where my path is going to head if I don't change the direction. So therefore, as soon as possible, I need to do something different. And so we have to learn. And so the thing is, if we're going to look at a standard by which we judge ourselves to see where I'm at, how am I doing, where do I need to go from here, we need to use Christ's example as our measuring stick. And so as we see him, that's the thing, is we understand we're going to be conformed to his image. And so how do I look in comparison to him? What am I lacking? What am I need to work on? And so as we see Jesus, then we see ourselves and we see, okay, this is where I'm falling short. This is where I need his help. And that really, it humbles us, but it's valuable because we get a real perspective. And then instead of trying to pretend that we're in a better shape than we are, we can just, Lord knows what we are. We allow him to show that. He says, okay, Lord, I accept your diagnosis of my situation, and I see it's not, I've got issues, and so what is your cure? What is your prescription for the situation I'm in? And so then we yield to him, and that's when we're able to start having him work in changing us. So it's, as we conclude, it's thought that God wants to help us with the deeper issues of our hearts. And it's, as we talked about it with principle number two, that every sin has its origin in our hearts. And so he knows what those deeper issues are that have been contributing to our personal struggles. And so he wants to get them out in the open and says, okay, let's deal with these. Let's expose these so that then you can get victory in them. But of course, our tendency is to ignore those issues of the heart and try to focus on what everyone else is doing wrong. And when we have that critical spirit, what's happening is that we're only ensuring our continued defeat, because we're never actually getting to the root of our problem. It's always someone else has a problem and they need to fix that, where we say, no, I'm the one that needs to confront this. And so, if we instead turn our focus to our own heart issues and say, okay, Lord, it's time, let's deal with these things. And as we yield to his transforming work that he seeks to do in us, that's when we're truly helped, and then as well, that's when we can be a greater help to others. Because he's changed us, he's transformed us, and then if we find someone else that is struggling, we're seeing clearly, and it might be something, it's like, oh, they're struggling in a way I was struggling, that I can share with them how God helped me. And I can encourage them and say, I was where you were, and God helped me, and now I'm in a different place. And they can look at your life and say, yeah, that what you're talking about, I don't see that in your life anymore. And so that gives them hope, that they see, yes, that God can change them. And so we just, it's learning to have that focus, that we don't try to fix everyone else until we've fixed ourselves first.